This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill, the story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
This is Deeper Thumb, the rabbit hole, and we have red cups. In support of our guru natures, But today, we've crossed the line of Saturn in our journey. And what we had planned for the sponsors today later was we were going to do invite you to experience the Angel of the Abyss. But for three times that I've done that ritual in a row, I have had my house basically get sold or otherwise have had to move. So we decided we did not want you to have to move our center after we just bought all the herbs for the Queen City at Curio and Apothecary. So therefore, we're not going to do that. But if you want us to do that when the COVID experience is over for sponsors, we will certainly entertain that in a place that's a public place. Or a place we can rent.
But not here.
But not here.
Yeah, not here.
So for the sponsors instead, we're going to do an analogous experiment today after the show, which is going to be a trip into darkness. And the kind of darkness that you get after you've died. And that's a great place to start, because today's show is about all the planets that typically either directly relate to D'Oth or otherwise astrologically involve hidden movement. Where Neptune is like the hidden movement of the waters, that's Leviathan or Tiamat. You know, those kind of entities. Mm-hmm. Where Uranus is basically the hidden planet of fate that changes things radically, but you don't know that it moved things around. In fact, if you look at our life right now, the squares of Uranus happened twice. One when Trump went into office and one when we came out. Look what happened then. Where we our lives are no longer the same. The hidden transformation is almost complete to whatever future we're going to go towards. We don't know what it birthed something new. And then the other planet, which is Pluto, which typically relates to the gateways to real darkness. But before we get into real darkness, we want to just say darkness doesn't necessarily mean evil. And let's open the show with that.
Yeah.
We have today with us somebody who's probably my most favorite occultist, the second person that, when I'm his age, I hope to be an occultist like him, Louis Martinet. And I had the pleasure to meet Louis in person at Starwood many years ago when I still went out before I was doing my master's degree and hid into a closet to get a master's degree done. And then hid for 5 years and that way. As you do when you're trying to finish a master's degree. It is kind of how it is for you. If you want to achieve a master's degree, you got to go hide in the darkness out of
exactly
action. Yes. To actually get it done.
And see what comes out.
Yeah.
You never know.
You never know.
Yeah. I spent a year in the basement of a library.
That is the darkness.
That is the darkness.
An aspirational darkness for some people where they love books.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times when we think of the darkness, like particularly, because I know one of the spirits you work with the most is Grand Zombie. And mm-hmm. Grand Zombie to me is this process that you have to go through when you die. Mm-hmm. It is literally the process of the ride where you die. And you come back in another form, and that whole process is Grand Zombie. But that is all darkness. That is all a type of darkness. Mm-hmm. Because you can't stay the same.
No, and you cannot. No, it is impossible to stay the same. What you were before the process seems much smaller after the process is complete. To me, it's not so much a losing of a self or an identity as this expansion that makes holding on to that smaller self or that smaller identity irrelevant.
That's an excellent way to put it. That at this point it dissolves because there's so much more you could be.
There's so much, yeah.
Or there's so much more that could occur, or there's so much more that you could adapt. But what you can't do is basically keep that pebble.
Yeah.
And that pebble just happens to be the story of the I, the story of me, the story of the form that you have currently.
And yeah.
Once you lose that, it would seem like a darkness because you can no longer tell where you end and anything else starts.
Yes.
Which also, I think in a large way, it's like how Grand Zombie and Buddhism interrelate. It's like if you really get there, you can't tell where you end and something else starts.
No, you can't. No, you can't. You know, when I look at a lot of where I start, it seems like this vast to-do list. I get up in the morning, and if I concentrate, you know, before practice, if I concentrate on the day, it's like, oh, do this, do this, do this, do this. Oh, I did that well. I'm happy. Oh, I didn't do that well. I'm sad. Stimulus response, nothing in between. A mechanism. Many ways like a mechanism. Good things happen, I feel happy. Bad things happen, I feel sad. And to go into the darkness and lose that is no horrible thing to me. It's nothing to be avoided.
I don't think it's horrible either. Mm-hmm. However, the greater the attachment to that mechanism, the greater the fear of letting it go.
Yes. Yes. That is so true. I saw you work. I was lucky enough to be at a ritual with you that you did at Starwood decades ago, and saw you working with people, getting them to let go of that. I think it was a man and a woman. And that was very, very, not only impressive, but enlightening to me. Great experience. Well, thank
you. But I mean, in a way, this is the kind of darkness we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. If we consider like the Greek currents and the Apollo currents, where everything's light, it's defined, it's ordered. We have a mechanism, we get rewarded. You go to school, you get good grades, and you get a good job, and then you got a wife and you can't die. This is the side that's not that. It's the side of like when spirituality crosses out of what is defined.
Yes. Yes.
When it's no longer just an easy, I mean, a lot of spirituality can be easily rote memorization. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really think that, like, but not this. And we were talking pre-show about how even when you do voodoo possession rituals, you are pushing your consciousness into darkness to allow another consciousness to come forward. It's like the death experience of this darkness again, or entering in the abyss. When you get good at it, you're not there.
Yeah.
And you have to trust. You have to trust that you'll come back.
Yeah.
If it's a real possession ritual, you don't know that.
You don't. You
know that because it's our compact with the spirits. But when you're there, you don't know where you're at. You don't know what there is because now you're where they exist in a way outside of the normal light and outside of normal time.
Mm-hmm. And you know, yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. With that, the possession is one of the greatest acts of love, as one of the greatest acts of a greatness of heart, to let some other spirit use your body, to enter that darkness, to move out and let another spirit come in with the trust in the Hungan or the priestess that you will be able to, they will watch you, watch over you, and have you come back in. That is a tremendous amount of trust. And it is such an act of love to, I mean, I give somebody a cup of coffee in a red. Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, that's a good thing to do. Give somebody your body, to give someone something, some spirit, your body. What an act of love. What a greatness of heart.
But that process in itself is very much like what we're describing, right? Like
exactly,
like the death process.
It is
very much like when if anyone has the mispleasure or pleasure of meeting the angel of the abyss that I call Corazon, you'll find out it is very much like you are forced to lose your boundaries of what.
Yes,
you come back. It's like what you were describing earlier. You come back as more.
Yeah.
But you still have to put yourself boundaries back together.
Yeah.
To even function here.
To even function, yeah.
In this space, those boundaries are important. Like day-to-day yes. life, to exist in consensually with other people, those boundaries and definitions are the only way we can do it.
That is so, yeah. Yeah.
But this is almost like we're in the threshold of going to what would be the next, the last part of the yeah. season, which is you get in contact with your own soul.
Mm.
Right? I mean, here we are in the darkness, but you cannot connect to your own soul if you're limited by you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes. Absolutely. You can't,
to me, it's like the more inflexible you are and the more the mechanisms are there, the less you can actually connect. So yes. all that has to go away in the dissolution of the darkness to be able to actually get this kind of illumination or enlightenment mm-hmm. or any of it, or one with the Tao or one with chaos or
mm-hmm. shifting in general around this.
Yeah.
It's like to be able, at least pulling from a Buddhist current, it's like, what's the vows of the Bodhisattvas and Buddhists, specifically more Bodhisattvas because they're on this plane. It's being able to shift and adapt to any role needed at the moment. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of flexibility in oneself to even do that. And then you have mm-hmm. to ask, well, are you okay being in that role? That's actually a harder question. Most people are defined by the roles they have. In a Bodhisattva context, you are not, because you will adapt whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That could be like you being, they'll go on to saying you can be a beggar. You can be a prostitute. You could be a king. You do whatever is necessary at that moment. But that is now having the trust that you can come out of that knowing that you are more, as Louis was saying.
Mm-hmm. For me, with my limited experience of that, the power that allows me to do that, at least a little bit, is that love that recognizes that who I am is who you are. Who you are, who you are, and who everyone that is listening is, and all of the little microbes in my body, that every sentient being, that my nature is of their nature is of my nature, and I can, in recognizing that, expand to the point that I can let go. I can let go of this everyday list of to-dos, which may really benefit people. That's why I'm doing it. I think they benefit people. And there's still a defined list of to-dos. And they still keep me as more a mechanism than a person.
Man, I think that's, darkness gets such a bad rap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and yet, when you actually, you read Kabbalah, it's here in Kabbalah, right? When you actually read the original thing. When you read Taoist literature, it's yin and yang, not just yang. When you read mm-hmm. Buddhist literature, the void is nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the darkness. When you do old school chaos magic, and or even Hellenic magic, yeah. you're talking about chaos, which is described as a formless black void. You know, all these traditions go back to basically, even witchcraft, go back to this formless universe concept. Like almost any tradition you can come up with mm-hmm. has this idea of blackness, of darkness as the start before light. Even Christianity, God said in the formless void, let there be light before there was light, and that separated the light from the dark, which created the universe. I mean, but yet there's this,
it's politicized at this point where there is a preference on that. And when we're looking at it, it's like, what's the choices people are comfortable with? They prefer to have structure. They prefer mm-hmm. to use their cognitive brain. They prefer to have a step-by-step process, ideally, where they know a plan and they can see it. But in the darkness, this is where you actually need to have trust in yourself in some ways, whatever trust is in that moment, because you are formless. But being able to give yourself up to be reborn again or come out however you need to. And that's almost a core compassion, knowing that you're going to make through it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, the core compassion. With HML Horus Mott Lodge, we've been doing a series of rituals called 11 Star Working, where people take the different sephiroths. And I recently joined the inner council of HML in doing these rituals. And I thought, hell with that. I'm going to do the Ains. And I wrote them and I said, can I do the Ains? Ain, Ains off, and Ains off, ah, or. It may all come to nothing, but let me give it a try. So what I did was during one of the 11 star, the last 11 star, looked at Ain, just the that absence, Ain, nothing, that even beyond darkness, Ain saw, which would be limitless, that limitless nothing. And when I did that, what that taught me was, no, the darkness isn't out here. This void isn't out here someplace. It's in every atom in my body. It is in every molecule, every quark, that there's more space in this, what I call my body. There's more space in this, in it. Ain Safa Or, the third Ain, Ain Safa Or, limitless light. Then the light came in. The seeing or the recognition.
See, you're one step ahead of us. We're driving into the darkness.
Yeah, okay. The darkness, yeah. Limitless. Well, the darkness is there, man. That's me with my to-do list. Oh, I want to hold on. Oh, my God. I remember doing all kind of stuff, a variety of substances. When I was playing popular music, was drumming in popular bands, and my greatest fear was that I would forget the set that we did every night when we were on tour. What if I forgot this drum set? Oh, yeah.
Depending on the drug, that's a real concern, actually. Depending on how much of the drug is involved, that could actually be a problem.
It could be. It really could be. And it frightened me. The darkness. I was afraid to go into that darkness. I was afraid to let go of that. That darkness.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, just with possession. Which maybe, you know, possession is an economic term, or is seen in the United States as an economic term. It's something you possess. Taken by spirit. I know that that's another term that at the Buddhist spiritual temple got a little bit more popular. To be taken by spirit, to be taken by the Loa, you've got to like be able to enter that darkness and know that when you come out of it, maybe you won't remember the rhythms to that set. Maybe you won't remember the set order. And it's got to be so important to you. Yeah.
The truth is that is important for the show, right? In the light.
Mm-hmm.
But for the magic that happens in the darkness, if they came, it doesn't matter. If they're there and someone is possessed, it does not matter, mm-hmm. right? Sure, if it was filmed on YouTube and all that, well, probably no one's getting possessed anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's all like the light of the camera.
Light of the camera.
Locks it down, right? But if you're in a ritual and there's a real possession ritual and the set gets all messed up, you've been blessed by spirit.
Like it's messy.
The bounds of the structure do not matter.
Right.
You've achieved what the structure is supposed to achieve.
That's it.
That core, the spirit's there. Hey, how you doing? You know, like, let's talk. That's it. Right? Somebody's consciousness got pushed down to the point or expanded to the point that it's below the surface now. And they're now you're talking to embodiment of the spirit.
That really, yes. Anything yes.
The surface doesn't matter.
It doesn't.
It's flash. It's circumstance.
Yes.
This is it. You've achieved the goal that is necessary.
That is so well said. So well said. Yeah, Andre, that is so well said. Ashwin Shamani, who has passed from the Voodoo Spiritual, New Orleans Voodoo Spiritual Temple. Remember with him saying it's disrespectful to stay to a script. It's disrespectful to stay to some sort of order because the spirits are going to come in. They're going to tell you. And I remember a national TV show coming and wanting us to practice and to practice a ritual. And he says, no, you can't practice rituals. He says, well, we got to because it's going to be on TV and that kind of thing. He says, okay, wait at the bottom of the stairs. They go down the stairs. I'm up there with Ashwin Shamani. He picks up a folding chair and throws it down the stairs at him. They run. It's like, that's the experience. That is it. That is it right there.
And I think, for years, I felt like I've been trying to propagate this idea of real magic, doing real magic. I mean, to my detriment financially sometimes, right? Let's be honest, like real magic, any real ritual is very much like a possession ritual. It doesn't have to be a possession ritual. But any real magic that you do, where you push yourself to the point that the magic is even possible, means fundamentally you're engaging in this kind of darkness. You are losing yourself or gaining yourself, whichever way you want to describe it. And all of the regimented day-to-day life existences that keep things in check are gone. That could be a simple candle ritual if it's done right.
Yeah.
If the magic's going to work, it's you're at that place where that's where you're at. And both of us, all three of us could talk about this for years and years and years.
Yes.
But really, this frightens people. And it frightens the younger people too. Like you can see, when I look at TikTok and some of the things that pass for magic on there, what I see is fear. Because if they would go here, it would change their life. If this if you're going to invite that kind of darkness in, not necessarily bad, that kind of chaos in to change all these aspects of your life will change. If you do magic and you assume it's going to change, it's not a lifetime. It's not a lifestyle accessory anymore. It's this really scary thing, right? And then what happens? Well, you have one whole set of reactions to that to try to get to do exactly what we're talking about, to get as structured as possible, to put as many possible controls on that as possible, safety upon safety upon safety upon safety. If you don't do it exactly right, you don't have the exact materials, if you don't have this, it's not going to work. Why? Because ultimately that's about fear. Because if you're not letting go of the control, at some point, we want to control at least most of the magic, right? We want to at least make sure no one gets hurt, but not, there's a point at which there isn't any control.
Right.
You've got your intention, you've got your universe, and things are going to change. And
yes.
You don't know how. And there's no more control at that point. It's the darkness. Any ritual can end up that way.
Well, any ritual, I even go further and say any meditation can go there if you're actually going in.
Any meditation.
When people talk about meditation, they're like, oh, can't empty your mind. It's all these attachment pieces. But really, what's happening there? That's the pseudo training or training wheels to get you into the ritual mode, right? You have to empty out first, and then you can start moving forward on that particular.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I would really say meditation is a training wheels to get into those states and say, like, how do you get thrown into there? Because you can't throw yourself in there until you separate out to some degree.
Yes.
And that's already a tough bind for most people. It's like super glue.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Super glue. Yeah. And I remember, like, you're in Toronto now, going up to Toronto in the 1990s, early 1990s for rituals and being invited up. And I came up with a voodoo from Havana, Cuba, Luis Nuez, and we're there. And there's a number of people. It was a big ritual, and we described what we were going to do. And someone said, "You know, that doesn't sound safe. The other rituals we're doing sound safe. There's protection. I don't see any protection here." And protection. I said, "You could die." I literally said, "You could die doing this." And people go, "Oh," but they had us back for 4 or 5 more years because that touched something. People want to move into that darkness. People want to move. There is, I think it's almost an intrinsic attraction to that. Let's let go of all of this stuff that I've accumulated that I call myself. Let's let go of it. Yeah. Moving into that darkness. Yeah. And meditation being a step. I for years and years, meditating and this. And at one time driving around Lee Circle in New Orleans, my mind stopped. And it was because every day I was meditating and I went, "Oh, okay." Yeah, I am not my thoughts. I am not all of this. Yeah, and with possession, letting go of those thoughts that I was identifying as myself. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is about possession in general, it's a pretty extreme example of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, honestly, after you've done them enough times, you can start to remember what happened if someone reminds you. Mm-hmm. But it's like accessing, you know what? It's like accessing a whole nother computer system. Like you have your brain and then you're trying to access another operating system, but you've learned enough about the operating system that you kind of get it. Or you've learned enough about looking through someone else's eyes that you can understand the context. But it takes many years to get there. But at that point, you're already comfortable with kind of submerging yourself and going into
it.
But for someone new who gets possessed, it's like it's totally disconcerting.
Yes,
like, totally. I think that's true. Like I was saying, anyone who does any ritual that pushes them to the breaking point, like the rituals you've seen me do, like that push people to the breaking point.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not past the breaking point, but maybe I should start telling people that.
You're going to festivals.
But I mean, it can't be stressed enough. I mean, not all of this stuff, like it could be a simple drumming thing that you let yourself go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we did the Dr. John thing, like the first introduction of Dr. John, which you have a book, well, we have a book of Dr. John, like that was about it. Like I was throwing people and I was helping artists do gone to get them possessed as much as I could.
Yes.
Right. But it was a lot of effort because it was a new spirit, but they had to let go of the darkness. They didn't know the spirit. The spirit didn't know us. Yeah. Like it was mutual darkness. It's like that spirit didn't know how to interact.
Right.
And like, so that's a huge level of trust, but that's kind of how new things come about. They have to
move
from the darkness. They have to come from there of some sort.
You know, and that trust, the rituals that I've done with you, I have seen members of your group have that trust in you. And that in itself is a very sacred thing because that allows them to let go. Yeah, that is so important. Yeah. You know, and the darkness too, that the identification of that with evil, the identification of the darkness or letting go with evil. I certainly had it. If I forgot the set, what would everybody turn around and look at me like, what are you doing? You know, that would be like a sense of a failure on my part, a sense which would be like a sense of evil. And at that point in my life, I could not let go of that. My life, I was that set that we did every damn night. And I even had the movements down for it. Yeah, whether I felt it or not, I had the movements that I identified completely with it. And the process of cutting through that takes so much experience. Like you said, the more you're possessed, the better. You know, the more you're able to almost normalize it. Yeah,
that's a good word.
Normalize. Yeah,
it's no longer an alien experience.
Yeah,
it's just part of who you are.
Yeah,
but then you've expanded to the point that it includes a whole lot of the spiritual world that you're not the small P anymore.
Yeah,
maybe you don't even see yourself as a small P. Maybe you don't see yourself as a big bad. You know, whatever. That's how you get beat up by a spirit. But maybe you see yourself, you know, interconnected like a neuron with spirits. And so it doesn't bother you quite so much because you don't believe in this clear line between you and them. And it's okay. They can come in. I mean, Zach and my wife and lots of people who hang around me have seen me just go around and mention something that will happen. And it's clearly not me, but it's not like I'm fully possessed. But I'll just blurt it out. Blah, 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 blah. You should watch that and don't go there next week because it'll be bad. And they said, that's not you. Where are you? What the hell is that?
Where are you located?
You're like, well, you know, they're there. Like, they want to speak. You know, I just act as a messenger some days, right?
Right. That's probably the most complicated question I can think of is, who are you?
It is.
Who are you? And I do a lot of work with mirrors. I love mirrors, black mirrors, magic mirrors. I'm sitting back in our temple now, and there's a mirror in front of me, just looking at the image in the mirror, going, who are you? Who are you? And as I do that, seeing the image change, and the multitude that emerges, just the fantastic multitude. You know, I am larger than I ever thought. Yeah.
Of course, it's a black screen mirror.
Yeah.
It's just kind of one of the things, like if we're in a low light, I mean, here we have camera lights on us, but, you know, when we do rituals, why do we do this in low light too? It's because the light physically inhibits us from actually expanding that way, right? Because everything's clearly defined. What happens? You have to train yourself to actually make it ill-defined so that way you can actually go through and see a spirit in the middle of the day. Right? Like,
wow. Yeah.
It's like a neurological thing. Like, these phantasms are more possible when things are darker because the details are removed. And I think before the show on the Clubhouse, we were joking. And I said, in the darkness, we're already perfect because nobody can see your flaws.
Oh.
No one can see your change. So it's like doing a Dionysian ritual where you get possessed by animals and you go rip to shred prey. Right? That happens. In the moonlight, in the darkness.
In the darkness.
Because the curtains go down on your conscious mind. The curtains go down on your self-image and you become the prey and the predator, right? Mm-hmm. The curtains rise up and there's a new show going on. There's a new theater going on.
Oh, absolutely.
And you and this ritual, and that's the theater. It's a whole different you. It's a whole different presence. And it's perfect. Because in the darkness, it's perfect. You cannot see the flaws of your own self-image. You can't see the flaws of the spirit you're pulling in or you're identifying with. You can't question whether or not it's real. You can't see the flaws that other people will shine upon you because that's their belief, right? Like, spirit possession isn't real. That's what happens in the light of society and everything. But it doesn't happen when you're alone in the dark or you're alone with a group in the dark. That's the whole point. The darkness, then everything is perfect. But in the light, it's exactly what you're describing. You have to go 9 to 5, right? Get up.
Yeah.
You've got project management software or time software that challenges you down to the minute for
infinite campus. Yes.
Room, right? Exactly.
Oh, thank you. That was really beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, what is darkness and what is light? You know, a lot of times people say, you know, I hear darkness is the absence of light. What if it's Ein, nothing, Ein Sof, limitless nothing, Ein Sof, or limitless light? What if this nothing, what if this darkness is what the light comes from rather than the absence of light that changes the whole thing around?
Now, if we go all Taoist, Yin becomes Yang. Second, if you really understand Taoism, like the darkness births the light. The light births the darkness. They cannot be separated.
Yeah. So
this abysmal kind of darkness of transformation births the structure of the universe. Your own personal structure.
Yeah.
Every part of the dying and getting reborn in transcendent Hinduism basically births your new life, right? Like when you're in the darkness, you're birthing your new life.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like, even if we're looking at, like, you know, Chinese ancestor work, which is a little bit different than other ones, though, as a baseline, most cultures have it. It's like, what do they say, at least in living conditions versus death conditions? It's exactly the same. You're just in a different form, right? So this is where you're like, well, what are you at that point in death and what are you in life? That becomes a harder question going back to that emptiness piece and darkness piece, because it means you can change. And it's just an identification piece of what you are. We could be the living dead or we could be the dead living. Right? It's like there are multiple ways you can take that.
Well, how many people do you think are the living dead or the dead living right now?
That's a harder question.
Does the darkness have something to do with the darkness of Lovecraft? I think so. I think, we just published, in fact, Black Moon Publishing just did a book looking at the Necronomicon in Lovecraft. Yeah, I think it's like 700 pages long. So it's quite a little encyclopedia. And that darkness that Lovecraft loves so much is essentially a threat to, it was and is essentially a threat to who we think we are and who we want to keep being, trying to hold on to that. In that darkness, in a larger sense, the Cthulhu, what is the parent of Cthulhu in terms of that fear? maybe death. We may not see Cthulhu, but we know we will all die. So that's almost like that's the parent of Cthulhu. And we reduce this kind of fear of our own death to Cthulhu, to these monstrous images that take away from us who we are. I remember a ritual, again, decades ago, that a little girl was at. Maybe she was about 6 years old. And she says, I don't want to see monsters. And I said, there's not going to be any monsters here. And she said, what is a monster? I asked her. And she said, a monster is something that eats people. Yeah. And who is that person that is eaten? That's that definition of self.
Right.
And that darkness eats it. Yeah. In a way. That's an analogy. Yeah. It eats it. Yeah.
I do think, too, that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the whole Cthulhu mythos was a fictional paradigm.
After 700 pages, I do.
before so many people actually work with it, but it's getting to a...
Was that a pop culture magic standard? I mean, we see it everywhere. Everyone knows of it or heard of it to some degree.
But really, the best Cthulhu ritual I had ever seen was a ritual that looked like a combination of a Cthulhu summoning with a Chode ritual. It was a very Buddhist ritual. It wasn't like the normal, right, you know, like flailing around, because it got to the whole point of this is this ununderstandable thing that you are sitting and meditating through, and not necessarily getting torn apart, but it happens, you know. And it's totally it's a universal construct that is completely ununderstandable by your brain, which is exactly how ceremonial magicians describe God.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So Cthulhu and God, pretty close, right? Both are essentially beyond the human comprehension. Anything, the whole Lovecraftian mythos is anything beyond the human rational comprehension is terrible. And not terrible in a bad way, terror-inducing. Because you cannot comprehend it fully. You cannot limit it. You cannot, that darkness is there because you cannot provide clear boundaries on it. Now, it's true of any spirit, but nowadays, like, well, most people do fairy magic, it's Tinkerbell. So I guess, you know, we thought we can do that. Angels are this nice little, beautiful
humanoid
things instead of the, you know, spiraling eyes that stare at you from all angles and flame everywhere, right? So I mean, that, which is what the Bible describes, but I mean, and that's basically getting it, like, that's what we tend to do. We tend to make things safe. And the whole point of the Cthulhu and I think Lovecraft mythos is to touch and to bring something into fiction, and then people adopt it in ritual, is to touch something that is not limitable, is not by the very nature of the darkness, it's not understandable, it's not possible to reduce it in any meaningful, cutesy or commoditization way. It just can't be done.
Yeah.
Although nowadays they kind of have done it, that found ways to commoditize it. But usually it's impossible to commoditize. Who wants to buy something that causes madness? It's this darkness that has no commercial value, has no way to make seemingly reduce, unless you adopt a premise that the darkness itself and the unknowable is not bad.
Right. And I'd say, like, if we're going back to these greater planets past Saturn, you have Neptune, you have Pluto, you have Uranus. These are all forces, essentially, at that point. It's like, how do you define death, which represent? How do you define the emotional ecstasies or down points with Neptune and its craze? And then you have Uranus with the spontaneous thought processes.
Or radical change
of
fate.
How do you define that? You cannot on a conceptual conscious level.
No.
You can only define it in retrospect after you've experienced it. Like, because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then you don't even have you might spend a lifetime trying to make sense of it.
Find the words. Yeah.
Find the words, yeah.
Right, find the words to embody it. And then this actually gets to a piece of, now we get into the arts themselves specifically, where you're like, all right, maybe you're trying to embody and touch back that spark. Through music or arts, which we know historically can have a connection to any of those three planets.
Yeah. And I love the word awful. I just love that word, that the darkness is awful. Because awe, like awe-inspiring, not bad. Awe-inspiring. I mean, originally awful meant stay away from it. Now awful to me means, oh, it inspires awe. This is awe. And something's being swept away because it's awe, you know, that all the definitions.
I think awe in itself is actually should be terrifying.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Awe isn't some trivial thing. Like, having done Ra work where people were more scared of Ra in the ritual than Set by far because of the awe. Because you stare at the sun. We're talking about darkness, but this is a type of darkness too.
Oh, Andre,
staring in the god of creation in the Egyptian myth and in the face. If you believe that, that should be awful. That should be totally awful. Like
awful, full of awe, full of awe. Yeah, right. Awful.
And it should be completely a terrifying experience.
Yes.
I mean, but you could say that of almost any real encounter with a spirit. And by the way, I am totally not saying through this conversation that you should avoid spiritual contact because it's terrifying and awful. I'm saying you should be scared and do it. Go and drive in.
Yes. Awe is such a positive force, to be in awe. The great prophets of the past, the great teachers of the past were in awe. And as they were, we can right now, be in awe. And it's a beautiful, beautiful consuming experience. Yeah. Awe. Darkness.
If you're truly in awe, mm-hmm. right, it again is mutating. People mm-hmm. who have had those kind of spiritual experiences, you never go back.
No, you don't.
You can't be the same. You're not the same.
Right. That is so true. Yeah. Yeah. And particularly now, at this point in my life, I'm seeing a lot of the people that I work with are passing or dying. And it is a tremendously positive teaching experience. It's like, accept the darkness, accept the awe, accept the change. It is the wisdom of no escape. Yeah, the wisdom of no escape. Accept it now. Understand it. And the more you understand, like stand under, look up at it, understand. The more I understand it, the more awe rains down upon me and the more I can accept it. Yeah. The darkness, that darkness, yeah.
That particular darkness.
Yeah, yeah. And Andre, I've never been in a position that you were in to like introducing people to that darkness in a ritual situation as completely as I saw you do. And that is quite a gift that you have and that you share with people. That
I'm just a messenger.
Right. I have heard that as a conduit. I don't like that because a conduit reminds me of sewage and water and stuff. I like messenger.
I am just merely the astral conduit of the internet, like the astral internet wavelengths that come down and connect, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I just opened a door and that's...
It's opening the door. Yeah. Yeah.
How's the song go? I am innocent. I just opened the door. And
I just opened the door. I don't know what this guy's coming from. Yeah, so I am like really happy that with the 11 star workings with the Horus Mott Lodge, I have taken the Ains. And again, it was like initially sort of a joke. Maybe nothing will come through. And so much has come through in terms of being able to move between systems, between the Dogchen, the Buddhist, the New Orleans Voodoo, and Maggie's system, Nima's system, the Mahdian. One of the things that I think was most important that really moved me was when Maggie was writing, this is Nima was writing Kenneth Grant and lots of letters coming back and forth. And one of Maggie's biggest thing was mask, the dance of the mask that we wear. And Mr. Grant wrote back and said, you know, there's nothing underneath those masks. And it went right over my head. I had no idea. But Maggie heard that. Maggie heard that. And there was a tremendous level of development with her. That was that shock that pushed her into the darkness, pushed her into that. Yeah, just a letter. Just from a teacher that she really valued. Yeah.
Yeah. All the self-images we have are lies.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing underneath that mask. Yeah. And that nothing is in every atom and in every quark and every whatever. And it is what gives birth to the light. It is not the negation of light, it is what gives birth to the light. And if I don't see the light in its fullness and think of myself as a to-do checklist, that's my problem. I'll work through it. No, but I know that there's something to work toward. Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's already 7:53.
Oh my God!
It's like 5 minutes.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. I think that the darkness is where the light is born. That is probably the most important thing that came out of this, whatever is sitting here talking.
Absolutely. And I think to go back to what we were saying before, it's like there is going to come a point for everyone who does any kind of magic, even if it's super hyper-structured, that it all breaks down.
Yes.
It just will break down. It could be super structured. You might think you have control over everything, but you keep knocking on the door. Eventually, you're going to have to accept the fact it will knock back.
Yes. Yes.
And I think that's and we could call it chaos. We could call it this Da'ath. We could call it darkness. But at some point, you're going to have to accept a knock. Mm-hmm. Or it will force you to accept the knock.
Thank you. Thank you, Andre.
It'll keep knocking.
It'll keep knocking.
And knocking harder and harder and harder until some point you get out of biochemistry and decide to be going a shamanic path and not be a strict material. Oh, wait.
Wonderful, yeah. It will keep knocking. It will keep knocking, yeah.
And louder, yeah. And harder, and weirder.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember being in Montreal and working with the angel. At that point, I thought the angel was something separate from me. And what the angel said to me was, you can sit in the corner and eat shit as long as you want. It'll be here. The banquet will be here. It's like, it's always there. That knocking is there. And you're going to get more hungry as time goes on. And you're going to want to come to that banquet and get out of the corner, the little corner of the little self. Yeah. Into the darkness. Yeah. In every atom.
It's still the darkness.
It's still the darkness. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So at 7:55, we'd love to have you come back on the show.
I love
these Andre, phases.
Yeah.
I should just reach out to you more and then.
No, I do that too, the hermit. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Phases. Yeah. Like, but like, as soon as COVID's over, not only would we like you to come on the show, we'd love to. I said this before the show, but I'm saying it now in the public. We'd love to have you come up here, do big voodoo rituals with
us. I would love to do that. Yes. Thank maybe you.
Maybe for DP, we'll summon Cthulhu. I don't know.
Yeah.
At least Haster or something.
Yeah.
You know, or Nihilithrop or whatever.
Right.
That's at least a more fun break reality and transcend any reality tunnel you're in right now to whatever reality tunnel.
Yeah.
Is, right. Equally scary as Cthulhu, but at least more entertaining.
Yeah. There was a big thing about Cthulhu and going out onto the lake. You know, in Chicago, and I was working with a Chicago group then, and Bertois would like take a boat out and summon Cthulhu in the waters. And it's like, yeah, that you're putting yourself at risk when you do that in this little boat on a big lake.
I wouldn't summon Cthulhu, but I totally have this dream of building a pontoon boat on Toronto and basically taking everyone out there for an occult party where we summon massive water spirits out on Lake Ontario.
Yes!
Maybe not Cthulhu, but yeah, something but like that. Water in the middle spirits. Of the lake on our pontoon boat that we're going to... That
Papa Twilight.
That he has named Papa Twilight because he called me Papa Twilight.
So Papa Twilight. So it's
gonna be like Papa Twilight's cult party boat.
Oh my. You know, with New Orleans voodoo, that sounds like Marie Laveau. Yes, when she hit the barge out there and she would invite the people onto the barge for the big party and the rituals and stuff. And Lake
I'm going to build it. I got plans right now.
All right. I will drink to being a passenger on that.
All right. So the word becomes law. The darkness becomes light. And now the future has been written.
So voted B.
Thanks again, Louis, for coming on. If you could stay on a couple minutes, I'm just going to prep the people. You're welcome to stay if you want for my, it's soul-destroying ritual.
God, I would love to. There's Beltane, and I've got a ritual after this to go and draw that. Yeah.
Love to have you back on. And like I said, seriously, as soon as COVID dies down, we'll have you come up. We'll fly you in. Make a whole big voodoo weekend out of it.
Oh. Andre and Zach, thank you. Zachary, thank you. And the Dr. John, yeah. Gotta mention Dr. John.
Dr. John,
yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
Now, for people who are not sponsors yet, since we're still recording, become a sponsor. What we're going to do is essentially a ritual out of my shapeshifting course, which was inspired by Chilled Rituals. Where you learn to exist without form for a controlled period of time. I would not say that this is a darkness ritual.
Oh, it's a darkness ritual.
Even though it's just a meditation, it's a little bit scary, but we'll bring you back. So we've got to have some trust with that. So if you're not a sponsor yet, become a sponsor. And we'll slack that out. I think everyone here is sponsors, so we don't have to say that. But on the show, when you're listening, this is the kind of stuff we do. We've done angel working every time. The only reason we're not doing the angel of the abyss is we don't want to lose our center. That's it. We'll get a new center. I know we'll get a new center within a week, but nope, we don't have enough people helping us move it. So yes. I'm not doing it. And we want to thank you again, Louis. Keep it down the rabbit hole. Stay safe. I know
you too.
A little bit crazy with COVID.
Yes.
Vaccine.
Stay safe.
Stay
safe. Thank you.